Thanks for tuning in to Happy Horror Time. Before we get to our interview with Tom Matthews, we're going to play a quick trailer from our friends at the podcast You Should Have Ghosted. Check it out.
Hello.
We are You Should Have Ghosted,
a true crime online dating podcast.
I'm Shayna, and I love true crime, wine, and I met my husband online.
I'm Liz, and I'm single and exploring online dating.
We're ex-coworkers who became best friends through our obsession with true crime podcasts and decided we should make one of our own.
You Should Have Ghosted is a podcast that we hope will enlighten people to the dark side of online dating and shine a light on serious issues with accountability in the dating app world.
Join us for dark stories and cringy content.
See you next Tuesday!
Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time Podcast. My name is Tim Murdoch.
And my name is Matt Emmert. And we are so happy to welcome to the podcast today the star of The Return of the Living Dead and Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives, Tommy Jarvis himself, Tom Matthews.
Woo!
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
We are so fortunate to have you on the podcast. We're big fans. And, you know, we just want to talk to you about some of these hits that you had and that you were in and movies that have still been lasting for so, so long.
Yeah.
But, you know, taking it back actually before any of these horror hits, where are you from originally? And growing up, were you always interested in being an actor?
You're never going to believe this. I was born on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, my God.
Wow. On the street?
On the street. Then they walked me to the hospital. It was a children's hospital on Hollywood Boulevard. So myself and my two brothers were born at the same hospital, same doctor.
Wow.
I grew up in L.A. We grew up in a suburb called Covina. I guess there's more radio commercials about West Covina, car dealerships and stuff like that. But and then I moved back out to... We lived in Pasadena for about a year and a half when my mom remarried, and then we moved back out to Hollywood with my grandmother. She lived right off of Cahuenga and Melrose, if you know the area.
I do.
Of course.
Yeah.
Fairfax High School. I graduated from Fairfax High School, worked at the farmer's market.
Wow.
And then I joined Lorimar Productions. I went and worked for them in a department called Management Services just for the sole fact of getting my SAG card.
Oh yeah!
So I was there for about a year and a half, and then this one of the casting people up there, Doris Sabo, gave me a walk on Falcon Crest.
I love that show.
And that's how I got my SAG card.
So were you? So you mean it just kind of like you just wanted the SAG card? Had you wanted to pursue a career in acting?
Well, you have to have a SAG card before you can act like that. But to work in film, you have to get a SAG card. And it's like a catch-22. You can't work unless you have a SAG card, and you can't have a SAG card, and so they have to attach heart to you and pay a fine to get you in the guild because you're the only one that who can possibly do the role, blah blah blah. I did that and I started doing a ton of commercials. Every 10th audition I went out on, I got 1 out of 10 commercials. So
that's great.
That was for 3 years. My first film was The Woman in Red.
Wow.
And then soon after that I got Return of the Living Dead.
So, and I think, and before Return of the Living Dead, so you said you're on Falcon Crest, were you also on Dynasty?
Dude, I had two scenes on Dynasty, and the second episode wasn't available to do my own voice. So I came on, but my voice was completely different. It was wild.
Wait, they dubbed in a different voice?
My voice, because I wasn't able to do it, and I had this really deep voice.
Just like mine.
Just like Tim's. Incredible, incredibly deep. That's amazing. So you mean, wow. So first time in TV and then they dubbed a voiceover.
Yeah.
And then moving on. So we'll kind of go in order here. And I know Return of the Living Dead was first. But how did you hear about the audition for Return of the Living Dead? And were you a fan of George Romero's Night of the Living Dead?
I was just an actor looking for a gig, you know, in L.A. and came from my agent, and you know, it was a horror movie, so read it. I thought the script was great, and you know, my first impression was it was hardcore, no comedy at all in it, but auditioned for it and then did a great job. I thought I didn't hear anything for 9 months.
Oh my God.
I get a call back 9 months later. I thought this thing had died. You go, no, they're calling you back. So I go in. Thought it was totally strange. I go in and not only was it a callback, but I had been hired. I didn't know that going into the audition, going back to the call. And they were reading people to play Tina opposite me, other actresses, because they had already cast me.
Wow. Wait, so, and so I have to know the actual audition. What did you have to do? Did you have to do any of the zombie type stuff, or did they have you do a regular scene?
It was just the regular scenes. Mostly for the callback, it was the scenes with the character Tina.
So you read with a lot of different girl Tinas?
Correct.
did you get to put your input in as to which one you would want to have as your...
Yeah, I did, but I don't remember if it had any bearing on them or who they chose. But Beverly was eventually hired, and she did a great job.
And, you know, what? Watching the film, I mean, it looked like it was such a fun role to play, especially the part about getting turned into a zombie yourself.
The whole arc of the character was fantastic. I mean, you know, this little naive punk rocker's first day on the job, a sweet, innocent kid and busting down the hallway with acid in my eyes, trying to find the brains. I mean, to travel from that in an hour and a half to what we ended up with was just so much. Just a lot of fun. And, you know, you don't shoot in order, so you kind of emotionally have to know exactly where you are in the scene. Because it's
like
not
level
like
level 1 or level 10.
Yeah, exactly. So emotionally in the script, you have to indicate where you're at and kind of...
I mean, and also the fact that, number one, you said, it wasn't your first film role, you said, but it was your first, like, major... Because you said your first film role was The Woman in Red?
Correct.
Yeah. But getting such a major role in a big horror picture like that, and I keep going back to being able to turn into a zombie because you get to do such a fun transformation, which I think must have been a lot of fun. But are you saying would there be some days you'd be filming as a zombie and other days you'd be filming as just a normal person, be going back like with the filming schedule kind of thing?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that is.
Remember the scene where we cut the yellow corpse head off?
Yes.
Jimmy Kieran's supposed to spike him with the axe. He's just, he runs right back and gets Clue, and Clue's like, oh. So we get the guy on the ground, and they're like, we get the first scene on, it was on a 6 o'clock in the morning call. The first scene in the morning was us cutting his head off. And it was like, that's grosser. What am I doing? Just kind of bounce around, and that's... just how it goes sometimes.
I feel like it just looked like it was so much fun, and that's when we were thinking.
It was a blast. And the whole cast was great, and the crew was great, and everyone was there. You know, we were having a good time. You know, it's funny about low-budget films, too. They create this, I've seen it a lot, they create an energy that kind of gets transposed on the film, as opposed to it's a huge budgeted movie. It's overthought, and I mean, because you're having to make decisions, you know, right there, and making changes and things like that, because you have a lot of pressure, and you can't wait for the sun to come up or go down or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gives it an energy that I think is lost in some big pictures.
You build a camaraderie with all of you.
Yeah, and we were lucky enough to be able to rehearse. We rehearsed 2 weeks before principal photography on Return of Living Dead. So Dan was very smart in doing that because it, you know, it looks like it's very natural when we're filming it, but a lot of that was rehearsed.
And you were one of the lucky ones. Like, you didn't have to go in the cemetery, like in the mud or in the rain. Like, you got a little bit, but not as much as everyone else.
No.
Well, yeah,
most of my scenes were with Jimmy Kieran too, which was great for me.
Yeah, well, and that's what I wanted to ask you about too. You know, you got to work with two pretty established actors at the time, Clue Gulager, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, Gulager. And James Karen, and they're both happened to be also horror alumni because Clue was in The Initiation and Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, and James was in Poltergeist. You know, they moved the headstones, but not the bodies. What was it like working with each of them? If you have any stories from them,
I think they learned a lot from me. So,
oh, of course, yeah, right, yeah. But what were they like? Were they mentors? Were they just fun to hang out with?
they were fun to hang out. Clue was under a lot of stress because he was hired at the very last moment. He wasn't even in rehearsals for us. So he wasn't there when we were rehearsing, and he had a lot of dialogue. And at the time, I think it looked like for him, I think he felt that it was below him to do this movie. So there was that playing into it. Plus, he had a lot of dialogue, and he's a serious film actor. So he takes it seriously, thank God he does. But that was pressure. So he was off to himself and under a lot of stress. And Jimmy and I, we were in a lot of scenes together, and we got our makeup done together. So we sat next to each other a lot, and just fantastic stories. You know, he was on Broadway and in Streetcar Named Desire, The Gentleman Caller. One of his best friends was Jason Robards, who came to the set a couple of times. Oh, wow. You know, oh, it was awesome. And there's just the story. And we found out, we got along great. And then we found out on part two, because we did part two together, mm-hmm. that we had the same birthday.
Really?
So that was like, oh, okay. No wonder we get along so well. Laurel Hardy in the Return of the Living Dead. So, yeah, we just gelled really well together, and it was just so much fun.
Yeah, and obviously there's a huge cast in this, and we noticed, just because we're horror geeks, of course, yeah. We notice all these little things, but we noticed that there's two actors from Friday the 13th Part 5 that were in the Return of the Living Dead, Miguel Nunez Jr. Yes. and Mark Venturini.
Correct.
So, crazy question, but did you know at the time, like, that they were from Friday the 13th movies,
no
considering,
idea.
Or you had no idea?
I had no idea at the time. Because I did Friday the 13th, Jason Lives, about a year after Return of the Living Dead.
Okay.
I wasn't a horror fan or wasn't into that genre at all or, you know, anything like that.
So you wouldn't walk around with wearing this t-shirt?
Yeah, you wouldn't be wearing Camp Crystal Lake or Jason Lives even before. No, it's just funny because you notice these things as horror fans. You see of the same faces.
Yeah.
And it is funny that they were in the part before.
Miguel was working. He was homeless. He was living in his car when he shot Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yikes.
Day, nobody knew about it. He was just very professional and happy to be there and just working. Yeah.
And then, of course, there's Linnea Quigley, who's kind of become like horror royalty. But did you work much with her? Because I don't think you had many scenes with her, but did you interact at all with her?
No, didn't have any scenes with her.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you got to, because I know most of your scenes were with James Cairn, so I didn't know if you interacted with that other part
we
of the
did,
cast.
Don Calfo was into it. You know, it's the scenes, Clue, the two paramedics. I was on set a lot overlapping with Linnea when she zombied out and was the nude girl walking down the thing. But I tried to help with the prosthetic at the time.
I was going to say, did you pick to go to set on those days?
She's doing what?
Oh, nude scene? Yes,
oh,
I'll be
what
there.
What are you doing here early?
Yeah, and then, so you get to the end of Return of the Living Dead. Your character, Freddy, I take it, is killed in the blast, you know, because they blast the entire city. And then 3 years later, they decide to do a sequel. What I was wondering is, how did they approach you about being in that? And what was the thinking behind having you play or come back as a different character?
The thinking was, because I found out, because I'm like, this doesn't make sense to me. So what happened was, they wrote the script. Ken Wiederhorn wrote the script. So when you make a movie, you try and go and get money for it. Mm-hmm. So you sell it overseas to foreign distributors to get some money to make it. And then you have a wide release in the States. So Return of the Dead was a huge success in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So the Japanese distributors said, yes, we'll give you some money. Give you a lot of money, but you have to have Jimmy Cairn and Tom Matthews come back.
How flattering is that?
And that was that. And that's how we came back.
Well, I guess my question is, and maybe this is just silly me, but it is called Return of the Living Dead. Why couldn't they just bring Freddy back dead and keep you?
Make it have me be a major. I think they wanted the same idea and us doing the same thing. Maybe that was their prerequisite to have us come back.
Yeah.
I personally prefer the sequel. I mean, I love them both.
What?
I know. I know.
And I wanted to ask you, Tom, actually, I have heard a little birdie told us that you're not a big fan of the sequel. And I guess what I was going to ask you is, was there anything specific you didn't like about it? You just didn't feel like it lived up?
Because the first one is like lightning in a bottle, because the humor, it's truly a dark comedy. You're laughing at what's going on. You're laughing at the situations. You're laughing at us cutting the guy's head off. I mean, it's the first and last time I have ever watched that movie. And when that scene came up, I'm laughing, but can't look at it at the same time. I'm freaking grossed out. So I'm like, oh, God. I've never felt that in another movie in my life, because it's one of the grossest. And the butterflies are flapping away. I mean, and the... The yellow corpse comes out, and Jimmy's there with the axe, and he's like, "Oh my God!" I mean, just so great, and so it comes out of the situations, you know. The humor comes out of this, and there's so many across the board in that movie that, I mean, when you follow it, it makes sense what's going on, but you can't believe what's happening.
So yeah.
Part two just made, you know, it was just too on the nose for the humor.
Yeah, I mean, I actually prefer the original. I'm surprised that Tim likes
the Michael Jackson thing at the end. That kind of sets the whole tone for the movie, and that's at the end of the movie. So,
I'm a bigger Friday 13th fan.
Yeah, well, was it? Well, I guess I asked, was it at least fun reprise, like working with Jimmy Caron again and doing another?
And Suzanne Snyder who was a friend of mine, and we actually auditioned. She and I got together and auditioned together for her audition. So when she came in, we're like, oh my God, that was great. The casting director loved it. It's like, you guys are like natural. So because it was just seamless, and because we had gotten together before.
And you got to do another zombie transformation. You know, it was really funny how poor you play two characters that unfortunately have the same thing happen to them. It was almost very American Horror Story before American Horror Story, where they bring the same actors back, but playing different characters and just don't tell you why, you know,
like, we're doing it. Who cares? Yeah.
So anyway, moving past Return of the Living Dead to Friday the 13th, Part 6, you had said, you auditioned for it about a year and a half?
About a year and a half.
So same sort of question in the beginning. What was that audition process like? And what did they tell you about the role of Tommy Jarvis when you were auditioning?
Again, I was just, you know, I was just happy to be working. So they didn't really tell me anything about it. I knew the franchise, of course. Hadn't really seen any of them. I think I saw part one way back when. And then...
you're like, where's Mrs. Voorhees? Yeah. Right.
Where's she in the script? So I auditioned once, and I went for a callback and went to Paramount and met Frank Mancuso Jr., who's the executive producer, and Tom McLaughlin, the director, and Frank's wife was in the room because she did the music, and a couple other executives and the other actors who I'd seen around town, and auditioned, and I got it. And then when I got it, I went back and was doing my research. I went and looked at 1 through 5 the next couple of days. And, you know, usually a sequel is a sequel. Mm-hmm. And 6 was supposed to be after 5. And I saw 5 and I was like, oh my God, what have I got myself into? Because it looked like a porno.
There's a
well,
lot of nudity.
Well, you do know the director of part 5 had that directed
porn. Makes sense. So. I mean... Yeah, so I was terrified, and then there was no lighting, and there was like no it was just not good for me.
I mean, I love them all.
I thought that was going to be the continuation of ours and the same look and everything. Thank God it wasn't. And and that opening sequence of Friday the 13th, Jason Lives is like one of my favorite openings.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Yes.
I guess, what was it like? So you come into part 6 and you're taking over the part of a really iconic character in the series. You know, Tommy Jarvis had been in part 4, Corey Feldman, part 5, John Shepard. Did you feel any pressure to play the part like either of those actors had, or did you try not to let their performances influence yours?
No, I went back and looked at the movies to see if there was some kind of mannerisms I could carry over for the character, you know? Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel because I didn't really, I wasn't a horror geek, so I didn't really.
I am. I'm
it's
guilty.
Probably it's a lot closer Tommy Jarvis, that character was a lot closer to myself than, say, Freddy was in Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah, because would you have had a tail? Did you have a tail back then?
Oh, yes. In Return of the Living Dead, you have like a duck tail.
Yeah, I crisped my ear for the role. Yeah.
Oh, and you also wore suspenders in both films. Was that you or the just a
It was
clue?
Me, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's funny.
My wardrobe, I picked up a lot of my wardrobe. That jean jacket is what I had one, with that, but for the character, I added the lamb's wool.
It's a good jacket.
I'm thinking, though, the only, I guess, preparation, you had seen the movie, so you knew Tommy Jarvis was quite the troubled individual, right? You know, he had been in the, yeah.
Now, did you ever meet your sister, Kimberly Beck?
No, but I know she was in my acting class, so I have met her.
That's we interviewed her. We also interviewed her for the podcast, yeah. And you know she has fond memories. But it's just so funny because you know she also worked with Corey Feldman, who then reprised it in Part 5 in like the first thing. And then there's a lot of Tommy Jarvis's. But what I wanted to ask you before we get into the actual film, had you heard anything when you were starting on it about? So there was an initial plan apparently to make Tommy the killer in Part 6 because right. After Part 5, you know, had you heard anything of this or was that completely scrapped by the time you were brought on?
I hadn't heard anything about.
Okay, so yeah. Luckily you didn't get to. Would you have wanted to be a killer, or did you prefer fighting against Jason?
Didn't matter.
Yeah, no.
Just showed up. It wasn't. We filmed it in Georgia, and
sorry.
A place called Covington, Georgia, and it was under the name of Aladdin Sane. Was the title of the production?
Oh. Wait, did you say Aladdin Sane?
Aladdin Sane. I think it's a David Bowie.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Oh, wow. So what were some of your favorite scenes from Part 6 and what were the most challenging? You said the opening scene.
Probably the most challenging was
the underwater stuff?
In the rain. No, you know what? That was pretty simple. They kind of had that dialed in, the underwater stuff. We were under for about 20 minutes at a time, off camera. There was two scuba guys off camera. When we wanted water, we just pounded our chest. When we wanted air, oxygen, we just hit our chest a couple of times, and they gave us our oxygen through that way for us able to stay underwater.
Wow.
That wasn't scary to you? I mean, that sounds terrifying to me. Like having to like pat my...
Well, it was in a pool, and it was heated. It wasn't in the lake, so there wasn't any currents or anything like that. And I've been underwater before, so I wasn't too... And it wasn't, I mean, if I had to bounce up, I could have got a, and there's guys there to, you know, help you out or whatever.
That's good.
How was the fire? The fire around the boat?
Fire was, that was on location, and that was a little trying because the special effects guy, I mean, I think some of my hair singed, the fire got so close, and I said that to the special effects, and he said some off comment thing, and I almost got on the fucking boat and went over and kicked his ass because I, you know, tell him to get his ass in the boat.
You're like, hey, you start singeing your hair for this.
But he and I had trouble before. In the opening sequence, the stakes, the spears in Jason, and the wind's blowing, and they want the spear to smoke after the lightning hits it, right? So the idiot is spraying the spear with this, I don't know what. The wind's blowing, right? He's spraying the spear. I'm downwind. It's going into my face. I said, what are you, out of your mind? What is this stuff? I thought it was like some acetone or some kind of chemical or something going on. The guy was a moron. So
so what you're saying is you would like to work with him again in your next film.
Yes, of course.
Very... when the movie was all done and wrapped, was there this? I always ask this question: was there like a red carpet premiere or any like a cast and crew?
Yeah, or Paramount.
At Paramount, awesome. Uh-huh.
What was it like watching it for the first time, seeing on the big screen?
It was, you know, I've never seen my head. Well, that's not true. But I mean, there's some really great shots, some beauty shots, as it were, I guess. Just headshots of like when I'm on the freeway by myself and they push in. Oh, that looked great. All that stuff. But even at the opening sequence before Ron dies and after Ron dies. And I'm just like standing there tortured. But it was cool. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And you know, they weren't horror films weren't embraced back then like they are now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, no, I mean,
so it's... that and like soap opera. If you did a soap opera too, you're like, yeah, you're doing so. That's good. Good for you.
It I love them like, both.
Yeah.
And now it's like, yeah, the followings for both.
Yeah, and now there's, I mean, gosh, it's just crazy. Also, when you think of Return of the Living Dead, I ask people, what do zombies eat? And they go, brains. I said, do you know why? And they go, no. I said, have you seen Return of the Living Dead? And they say, no. They haven't seen the movie, but they know zombies eat brains.
I can answer that. Isn't it because it makes the pain less or something? There's that scene in Return of the Living Dead when the poor zombie is like tied down and they ask her and she says like,
oh, yeah.
It makes the pain of life
worse. Dying. Not brains, the pain of dying. Brains.
That's true, though. That's a good
it's
question.
Amazing to me that they know that. So, I mean, that kind of put it in a whole nother stratosphere. It became pop culture at that point because people just think of, you know, zombies eating brains, because that's all they think of now is the zombies eat brains.
Do you get more Friday fans or Returning the Living Dead fans?
It's a mix, I guess. I guess if I think back on it more, I get called, maybe I guess Return of the Living Dead stuff. Mr. Perez, our booker books, he has all of us. So he's the one who's pushing those reunions and things like that.
When the film was done, was there ever talk of bringing you back for part 7? It was such a shame.
Friday the 13th. There was, I think, but I'm not quite sure what happened. You know, they used some clips in the beginning. That was about it. They should have continued it. It was just, it doesn't
they
make
still
sense
can.
To me.
There's still room.
Well, I just felt like it was such a shame because Tommy Jarvis had been this established character. And that
I
they
just
had
read something.
Movies.
They want to make Tommy the killer now and go back to make Seth, forget about everything after 6 and make the final one take place after 7.
Well, speaking of that, so part 6 ends. 30 years go by or so, and then you reprise the role of Tommy Jarvis in the fan film, the 2017 fan film, Never Hike Alone. Can you tell us how that came to be and how they got you back?
Another bizarre story. I have a very good friend who's a writer. He's been my friend for 30 years, 35 years. He has a roommate who has a friend.
Who has a butcher.
Who has been torturing the guy I know, Mike, to ever since he knew that Barry knew that Mike knew me, Barry was like crazy fanatical Friday the 13th fan. So he was like, every time, please, you got to please do anything. So finally, Mike calls me and said, would you do me a favor? Jeez, this one, you know, every time he sees me, he's just pleading. Very nice guy. Would you mind having dinner with us? And just so he'll just stop bothering me, blah, blah, blah. So this guy, it turns out to be Barry of Barry's Boot Camp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Barry J. He sold the company, but he's very involved in it and stuff like that. So I said, okay, anything for you. So we go and have dinner, and him and his friend and my wife and I and Mike, and we're just sitting around, and halfway through dinner, he goes, oh, you know, I'm executive producing on this fan film called Never Hike Alone. He goes, would you be interested in doing it? Something. And I'm thinking, oh God, a fan film too. So I said, sure, send it over to me. And he sent it over to me. And the production value was crazy. It was crazy great.
It's so impressive.
Yeah,
and the script was good. It was amazing. It blew my mind. Production value was great. And then I told Barry I'd like to, you know, talk to the director and see if we can figure out where I could fit in. And we premiered it at the Telluride Film Festival, and it was so much fun, so great. The fans' reaction, the place was packed, and they just sat out of their seats when I came on freaking out. People were telling me they were watching it. They were watching it at their home on their couch, and they would jump up out of their sofa when I came on. So it was a lot of fun.
People are such fans of yours and your character that they're that excited about you coming back even just for a cameo, you know. But so was the whole idea that these last 30 years Tommy Jarvis has just kind of hung around Crystal Lake and became a paramedic?
I've always saw him always, you know, he's never, until he dies, he's always going to think Jason's going to be out there trying to kill people, and it's his just a sixth sense that he has, and he's, you know, he just knows that the second shoe is going to drop at some point. So, I always saw him as a kind of a backwoods guy hanging around Crystal Lake in the outer outskirts, you know, in a cabin by himself, going to town once every, 3 months to get supplies and kind of setting traps, you know, all around Crystal Lake that only I knew would be where they were, and just kind of sharpening his blades and, you know, maybe have a lady, throw a gal in there or something, and have a daughter or a son that we don't get along anymore because I was an absentee father because I'm so obsessed with Jason and trying to protect people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Someone did send me a script. It was a great idea because of global warming.
Mm-hmm.
The lake has fallen. So you do an over a drone shot over the lake, and you can see Jason just, you see the top of his head because the water's going so low.
Oh, that's cool.
And then maybe the lightning hits him or something like that. And
well, I know also after Never Hike Alone, then they did the prequel, Never Hike Alone in the Snow, where you got to work with Vincent Guasta, is it Guastafaro? And then there are three more sequels of the fan film. That, do you know when that you're supposed to be in? Are they releasing soon, or have they been filmed?
No, we haven't even filmed them yet because of the COVID thing happening. So we're going to be working on next sequel to Never Hike Alone. Remember at the end, I take off in the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to kind of go back a little bit and fall back, and you'll see my. In Never Hike Alone, you don't see my fight scene with Jason in the sequel. You're going to see the fight scene with Jason. It's going to overlap. Everything's going to overlap and then go forward and then take off in the ambulance and go to the hospital. And then that's when we get introduced to Vinny Gustafaro again and all his deputies with all their high-tech laser scopes. Jason comes in and creates hell. He's got his two deputies who are just victims, actually.
Yes, no, we saw it. I've got to say, I think I can speak for both of us as fans. We're so grateful that you decided to reprise this role because it really is like a major treat for people who love this character and who love this series that you'll come back after all this time. It doesn't happen that often. So thank you from all of the fans for doing that.
Yeah, that was I was asked to be in Vengeance too, the fan film Vengeance, which I ended up not doing. And then also Deborah Voorhees'
13th Fanboy?
Friday the 13th Fanboy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 13th Fanboy, I was asked to be in that. I decided not to do that as well. I told her to save, I said, let's do the sequel, save something, because I was just like save my character for something special because, you know, it's not really worth what you want to use me for, or the mm-hmm. character for. And it was getting a little crowded, too, on her.
It was a lot of Friday the 13thers.
We also
saw
you did a horror film in 2019 called Killer Therapy with Adrian King. What was that like? Did you guys bond at all over your being in Friday the 13th?
That was the executive producer, Barry J.
Wow.
Oh.
From Never Hike Alone.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He's a huge horror fan. So he got us all back together. And I Killer Therapy. You should see it. It's kind of creepy. My son, my wife and my son's, and our son, our biological son, is having issues. So we put him in therapy, and the three that you see on camera do some awful things to him.
Yikes.
Yeah, one of them molests him. The other one gives him electric shock therapy. The other one does something else to him. And he, when he's younger, we adopt a girl because we don't, a daughter, because we don't want to have another child because we don't want them to be like him. And so we have been adopted. And so he's just going through these growing pains. And he ends up being a killing, just weird circumstances, people dying around him. It turns out to be him. He watches me, heart attacks, kills his mom. And just kind of goes on from there.
So it's a feel-good, uplifting also, movie, then.
It's a Christmas film.
Yeah, it's a happy movie. So my son eventually gets together with his old therapist, and And there's probably an 8-year time change. So yeah, the one with the electric shock therapy ends up getting them in a car and using the battery cable jumpers to give them electric shock therapy.
And where is Adrian? What is Adrian King one of the therapists?
She is.
Oh,
she
is. Yeah. Hopefully not getting electroshock shock.
She got something. I forget what she got, but she was one of the three.
We'll wrap it up for you because thank
check
you
it
so
out.
Much.
It's a lot of fun.
So there's one question we ask everyone at the end of the interview.
Okay.
What is one thing you can tell us about your experience working on Friday the 13th Part 6 that you've never told any other interviewer, podcaster, publication, even a tiny detail, anything, one little thing that you can tell us that you've never told anyone on an interview?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I told someone that. Let's see.
Oh, you enjoyed kissing Jennifer Cook through the bars in the...
No, that was probably not fun.
I tried to rehearse with her, and she wouldn't have it before.
Oh, no, no. So just a one-time deal, one take?
Yeah. How about that rubber band, though, that I shot on her?
That was amazing, one time.
That was one take, and it just... I saw that, I go, boy, that was amazing.
Right?
I know. Well, I just want to say, well, first off, we're very excited and looking forward to the three sequels to Never Hike Alone. So I hope that you guys will get to film it soon so we can all see more about Tommy.
Yeah, we're just trying to keep the franchise alive until this lawsuit gets over. And hopefully they'll come to their senses and, you know, bring Tommy Jarvis back in some kind of capacity like they
right?
do.
Like Jamie Lee Curtis and Halloween.
Halloween did such big numbers. So it only kind of makes sense. I don't know how far back they want to go, but.
Well, that's the thing. Then if they, you know, get all the rights together and New Line or Warner Brothers ever wanted to bring Tommy Jarvis back for a big studio release, would you be up for reprising the role?
It'd be fun.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And that's what every fan wants to hear. So thank you from the bottom of our fan horror geek hearts.
Yeah. We're geeks.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Actually, do you, before we go, do you mind if we take a screenshot picture with you? A little virtual picture?
Sure. No.
Okay. Ready? I'll give a countdown. One. Okay.
You see my hat?
Oh, what does that say?
You need a medical supply warehouse. It's from Friday the 13th. That's where we work, Jimmy, Kieran, and I.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's cool.
You need a. That's great. Oh, my God.
You need a. That's a funny name.
Okay, ready? On three. One, two, three. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Tom.
Again,
we really, really appreciate this.
My pleasure.
We'll keep you posted when the episode's going to come out. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Take care.
Okay, take care. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time.
This podcast is hosted by Tim Murdoch and myself, Matt Emmert. It's co-produced by Jacob Randall.
You can find Happy Horror Time on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and many other platforms.
If you'd like to stay updated, please like and follow the Happy Horror Time podcast page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
If you want to contact us, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your movie recommendations or if you know any horror stars you'd like us to interview.
To support the podcast and gain access to our bonus episodes, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime and sign up to be a patron. We try to release at least one bonus episode per month and really appreciate your support.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert.
And thanks again for listening to Happy Horror Time.